and be with us during this time. Amen.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. How are we doing? Are we okay? If at any point you're wondering what this is, no, I'm not bleeding. This is instead of face paint. So I have, it's a watch and a little note from my daughter saying I love you. So there you go. That's what that is. It was either that or I come with like a butterfly on my face. And so I know that some of you probably would have preferred that. Yeah, I know. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. As Cheryl said, my name's Daniel. I'm one of the pastors of this church, and it's great to see you this afternoon. So, quick question. How's your week been? Actually, don't tell me. Can we try and do something new that we've never done before? Can we try and do a magic trick? Who's up for it? It's like none of you were up for it. Okay, so just if I asked you the question, how's your week been? Just think of three descriptors in your head, three words that accurately describe your week. Doesn't have to be fancy, just think of anything. So there's 5 seconds to think about it. Everybody got three words? Okay, now here comes the magic. I'm going to read your minds. Did anybody say in their heads the word busy? Hands up if you said busy. Okay, I've got completely the wrong end of the stick here. Should we talk about something else instead? So a handful of you had a busy week. Did anybody have a busy week? Put your hand up if you had a busy week. Okay. You should have said busy. It would have made my magic trick work. This is why we don't do magic. Okay. And that's the real message today is we don't do magic. But let's be honest, busyness is a very normal part of our lives, isn't it? Nine times out of ten, if you ask somebody, you say, oh, how you doing? How's your week been? Busy. You hear that a lot, right? And if you then kind of go on and say, okay, and how are you? What are you likely to hear? Fine or tired. If someone's honest, you'll hear tired, yeah? Sometimes I ask people, you know, like I'm trying to get to know them, what do you do in your spare time? And I very often hear, what spare time? Like, anybody else resonate with that? Like, let's just do a little thing. You wouldn't believe how hard it was to get this little thing up here. So here we have a pie chart, and each of these segments represents 1 hour of our day. There is 24 on there. Honestly, it took us about 5 minutes to make sure we got the correct number on there. It was very difficult. But what we're just going to do, just to kind of demonstrate why we're so busy, let's just erase some of these hours of the day. So what kind of things do we need to do to just remain alive? Sleep. How much sleep do you need? 8 hours. So if we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... Who still needs 6.5 hours of sleep? That's ridiculous. Well, there you go. So that time's gone. What else do we need to do? Eat. How much time in the day do we spend eating? 8 hours. You spend an hour. Maybe an hour if we're being conservative. Yeah. So let's lose another hour. Okay. How are we paying for our food? Work. How many hours do you work a day? 12. Good grief, you're very hardworking. Much more hardworking than I. Anybody else? How many hours do we work? Eight. I mean, let's go average. Let's take out eight, shall we? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right, they're gone. So that's work. So far, we've gone to work, we've slept, and we've eaten. Housework, cooking meals, preparing meals. Let's lose another hour for that. That's gone. What about exercise? Yeah, hey, we're all trying to be healthy. We've lost another hour to exercise. Okay, what about if we wanted to, you know, keep up with our friends and, like, know what's happening on the traitors, go on social media a little bit, watch some TV? Give me a feel. 6 hours of that? Crikey. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There you go. And that tells you everything you need to know. I'm going to say less about 2 hours for that, I would say, just bits and bobs. So we've got 3 hours left. Can we think of anything that we might be doing in those 3 hours? School run, home group, putting the kids to bed, this, that, and the other, prayer, someone's praying. Hey, well done, you get brownie points. Well done, Steve. It's quite easy to see, isn't it, how our days can just get eaten, isn't it? That's an average day, like, that's with nothing going wrong. Oh, I forgot one, commuting. There you go, that's that gone. So you've got 2 hours left. Isn't that sad? But there we go, that is our... That's not worked. That's kind of typical, isn't it? It's not hard to see how our days can get pretty full pretty quickly. If you're anything like me, you probably do the thing that I do. Does anybody else stack things on top of each other? So because you kind of want to keep engaged with media, you want to watch some TV, you want to listen to some podcasts, you want to go on social media, you do two things at the same time. Anybody else do this? So I'm cooking and I'm watching, I'm gardening and I'm podcasting, I'm on the toilet and I'm on Facebook. And so are you. You all do it, don't you? Pretend that you don't do it. Yeah, so we're all doing the same thing at the same time, which means that realistically there's never a moment in our days when we're just quiet and we stop. Right? Anybody else like me? Just always on the go. There's always something. There's always some noise. Now, I'm a really active guy. I like to keep busy. I like to produce things. I like to be informed. I like to be engaged. So I do this all the time. I'm very busy. And frankly, I love being busy. I love to be busy. I love to be productive. But if I'm not careful, I can lean into busyness too much and actually leads me to a really unhealthy place. So rather than all that activity bringing me a kind of happy and fulfilled life, it actually can have the opposite effect. Now, I have a couple of alarm bells that happen, like when I know that I've been too busy. Does anybody else here have shower epiphanies? Yeah, handful of us, yeah. Epiphanies in the shower. Honestly, I'm having a wash, and all of a sudden I'll go, oh, that's a good idea, or oh, goodness. That, you know, I really feel like God's speaking to me about this situation or that person, or there's a solution there that I hadn't thought of. And I've begun to realize that actually I have those shower epiphanies because that's the only time in my week when I am quiet for long enough for an idea to come or God to speak to me. The rest of the time, I'm constantly feeding stuff into my ears. So when I start having those shower epiphanies, that's a bit of a wake-up call for me. The other thing I start to notice is that in my friendships, I start to think about my relationships as very transactional. I start to think about friendships as jobs that need to get done rather than enjoying people for who they are. And that's a real alarm bell to me. And I think, oh, I have to go and meet up with this person. Oh, I should go and meet up with that person because it's been a month. Rather than it being an actual true relationship. Just being really honest. And those are the moments for me when I realize I'm far too busy. I've crammed too much in here. And, you know, the result is that I start to see my fellow human beings as commodities and tasks rather than, you know, people, beautiful people made in the image of God. Can any of you guys relate to this? Yeah? Do you kind of know what I'm talking about? What we're going to do, we do this occasionally as a church, is we're just going to break down into little groups of threes and fours, and we're just going to talk about this. We're just going to ask some questions like, do you recognize that dynamic in your life? Do you recognize that drive to be busy all the time? And do you know any of your own warning signs, like when you yourself are far too busy? How do you know? So let's just break down into little groups of twos and threes. Gloucester Vineyard Church, this is your moment to be hospitable. So have a look around. Make sure that everybody is included in this. We're just going to discuss this for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we're going to come back again. Okay, let's hear from some of you guys then. So do we resonate with this idea of being ultra busy, and do we know what our warning signs are when we are getting too busy? Anybody got anything they want to say into the microphone? How do we know when we're a little bit too busy? How do we feel? Yes.
If I'm honest, I can.
Hallelujah. Absolutely. Get stressed. Anybody else? Yeah.
I had a boss who used to say, when do you know you're getting stressed? And I said, when I start getting short with people. And he told me it was much earlier than that. He said, it's when you start walking faster. So he had spotted someone I hadn't, which was really handy.
That's really interesting. Anybody else? How do we know when we're too busy, when we've reached that point? Yeah, all the way at the back? You're going to have to come to me, because otherwise it won't go into the mic.
Like forgetting to do really obvious things that you do every week, and you're just like, why? It's Tuesday. Why haven't I done that yet?
Yep, easy, simple things just falling out of our minds. Yeah, absolutely. So we can all recognize this dynamic, can't we? And so, hello, come back, I'm finished with you. So this month, we are going to be looking as a church into this reality that life is super busy, and that leaning into that busyness does not lead us into a rich and satisfying life. This month, we're going to be looking at the life of Jesus and the wisdom that we find in our Bibles to ask if there's another way to think about life and to set us up to have a more satisfying and fulfilling life. Like, I think all of us can relate to this idea that filling our lives full does not lead to a fulfilling life. Because, and Jesus was all about that fulfilling life. He was very articulate about why he came. He says in one of the biographies that was written about him in John 10, verse 10. Jesus said, "I've come that they might have life and have it to the full." Now, we come back to this verse all the time as a church. If you've been here for more than one Sunday, you've probably heard us say this again and again. But that's because it's one of the most important verses in the Bible, because it's Jesus in his own words saying why he came. So we should pay attention. So Jesus is talking, and honestly, the Bible translators, the guys who have translated it, they go nuts for this little phrase. They talk about having a rich and abundant life, having life that overflows to the full, a full and good life, having everything that you need, more life than before, life in the fullest possible way, a great full life is the way one of them said. Now, my favorite Bible translation is one called the New Living Translation, and it just simply says this: "My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life." Quick show of hands. Who here would like a rich and satisfying life? Yes. It's a handful of people who are like, "It's a trap." It's not a trap. It's not a trap. It is a genuine, beautiful invitation from Jesus that we can either ignore or we can accept. Now, no, that does not mean that we're all going to be fabulously wealthy. That does not mean that we're going to live a life without difficulty and challenge. It doesn't mean that all of our wishes are going to get granted and all of our wildest dreams are going to come true. But it does mean that in the midst of challenges, in the midst of the busyness of life, we can live well. And this term, we're going to be learning a little motto to guide our thinking. It's a very deep and very profound motto. And it goes like this: "Your God, I'm not, so what?" That's our motto. You're God, I'm not, so what? And in many ways, this simple little motto kind of encapsulates in a very simple way what it means to be a follower of Jesus. It's a simple statement about who's in charge in the world and in my life. It's a statement about who knows best. And it's a statement about where wisdom comes from, where true wisdom comes from. And so in this critically important moment when we think about this kind of busyness epidemic that we're living in, when we look at our friends and our families and we see them running around and we see our own lives, we see ourselves running around frantically busy, like what do we think is behind that busyness? What's driving that busyness? Because we all seem to have engaged in it. We can all relate to it. We can all observe it in the world around us. So what do we think is driving that? What's behind that? Does anybody have any ideas that you would like to say into the microphone? What do we think is driving this epidemic of busyness? What are people striving for? Yes.
Who am I and do I matter?
Oh, fabulous. Who am I and do I matter? Absolutely. Fantastic. Anybody else? What's driving it? Yes, coming to you.
I think excitement. There's just so much to get involved with and so much to enjoy.
Yeah. So maybe a little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out. Excitement about the possibilities of life. Yeah?
I think people can get caught up in the rat race too much. Yeah. That tends to hold people up quite a bit.
Yeah, being drawn into it and kind of everything being put in front of you and you get compelled in, yeah?
I think on top of that, it's a bit about they don't have to think about the bigger things in life. They're just going to go and chase money and success.
Yeah, absolutely. There's loads of different drivers there, isn't there? Loads of things that we can see. I can see us trying our best, as Aaron said, to make something of our lives, trying to make our lives better, trying to make our lives count, trying to make an impact in the world, to be valuable, to be accepted, to be significant. In other words, I see this busyness that's going on around us as a search for identity, of asking the question, who am I and do I matter? It's exactly what Aaron said. I see us working hard to create life and create a world in which we matter, to create a legacy that we can point to and say, do you see that? That's what I built. That's what I created. That's what I've achieved. This is who I am. Now, that's what drives me, if I'm honest. That's what drives my busyness, is that drive to be significant, that drive to be appreciated and seen. I wonder what drives you. Might not be the same for you. What drives you into that busyness? John Mark Comer is a guy who's thought an awful lot about this, and he has a slightly different perspective. He observes how we have an infinite capacity for desire. Like, I have an infinite capacity, an infinite desire to eat tacos. Like, I will never be satisfied until I have eaten tacos everywhere. Like, I cannot eat enough of them. And we have an infinite desire, infinite capacity for desire. Like, I don't think I'll ever be satisfied with visiting mountain ranges, or, you know, I will never be satisfied with, I've tried every single type of beer that I'd like to try, That's just me. I would like to try them all. I have an infinite amount of desire for that. And I'm a finite being. I have finite time and resources. You know, I don't have all of the capacity that I need to go and fulfill my desire. And so John Mark Comer identifies that this busyness is our inbuilt infinite amount of desire coming up against just the fact that we are finite beings, that we will never be truly satisfied. And so the busyness, he sees it as an effort to try and do the best we can, to try and experience as much as we possibly can. And honestly, our culture would encourage us in this pursuit. All the messaging we get from media all the time is to look at ourselves, put ourselves first, live according to our individual truth, be our own brand, make something of ourselves, do ourselves proud, chase our desires. In other words, to fill ourselves full. And we see it when we're raising our kids as well. Like, how often do we teach our kids that they are the center of the universe, that they need to put themselves first? You know, all of this adds up, and if I was to kind of approach this with a mind that's kind of sat in the Bible for a little while, I'd say that what culture is telling us is that each one of us is our own God. Each and every one of us, we're all our own God in this universe, and we need to go out into that universe, into the chaos, and create something that resembles us. Go out and bring forth beauty in the chaos. Go and bring meaning into the world. Strive to be number one. Go and be the top dog. Culture says to us, you are God, and so go and be God. Culture said, you're God, and he's not, so what? And the so what is work, 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 work. It's a Beyonce song, wasn't it? Or is that just me? I had that in my head all week. And so this is the lesson that we're learning, some of us the hard way, that a full life is not necessarily a fulfilling life. Do you recognize this dynamic? I wonder if you can think of the ways that you see it playing out in the world. And so into this cultural moment, Jesus encourages his followers to adopt a completely different attitude. That little motto that we had earlier on, to say, actually, I'm not God, you are God. To say, I'm not God and I don't want to be. To say, I'm not God, I don't want to be the center of the universe. I don't want to have to create my own significance. I don't want to have to be a brand. I do want you to tell me who I am. I want you to tell me what's good. I want you to tell me how I should be living my life. It's the totally opposite narrative to the narrative that the world would have us live by. To say, you're God, I'm not, so what? And the so what really is the interesting bit for me. Is if I'm God, then I need to go out and create all that good in the world. I need to work hard. I need to justify my existence. I need to create safety. I need to define truth. But if I'm not God, if the God that we encounter in the pages of the Bible is God, then I don't need to do all of that stuff. I can live differently as a consequence. And there's about a million ways we could unpack this idea, but this month we want to kind of take that little motto and apply it to our busy and hectic lives and our busy and hectic world. And ask, so what? How should we live if God is God and we're not? How should our lives look? How can we rearrange things? How can we rearrange things to remind ourselves that that is the truth? And so the first thing we're going to be doing is looking at the idea of Sabbath. And Sabbath is something which we as a church talk about quite a lot. It's something which home groups have looked at fairly recently. It's a question which gets asked pretty much every time there's a pastoral conversation. We'll say, how's your Sabbath going? Like, keeping to that? How's that going? That's all right? So many of us in the room are aware of what a Sabbath is, but I'm also aware that for others of us, that might be a completely foreign word. You may have never come across that word before, or you might have just no idea what that word might mean. And so you guys are going to help me with this next bit. We're going to talk very briefly about what Sabbath is, what the practice of Sabbath is. And rather than this just being me speaking for the next 5 minutes, I thought that you guys would say some stuff. So if you're a person who knows what Sabbath is, even in a very basic way, and doesn't mind speaking into a microphone, would you stand up for me? Be brave. I will point to you if you don't do it. So if you know what Sabbath is and you don't mind, thank you, and you don't mind speaking into a microphone, would you just stand up? And what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm just going to ask you to share one sentence or two sentences, the more simple the better, about what is Sabbath, where does it come from, how do Christians practice it? I think we need like four or five more people, thank you, to stand up. All right, so the way this is going to work is I'm going to pass the microphone around, and if the person who's speaking says your thing, feel free to sit down. But if you still have something that you think you can add, then remain standing.
A recurring ritual of rest.
A recurring ritual of rest. Okay, cool. Ooh, I like that. You can do this next time if you like. There's three R's.
God created, and at the end of that whole process, he rested and delighted in his work.
Very good. So right at the very beginning, there was a moment of Sabbath. So God set the example by stopping and resting. Okay, very good.
Fairly similar. Ten Commandments. 6 days you'll labor and toil, seventh you'll rest. And it's good for us. It's not for just for us. It's for God to be glorified.
Okay, very good. So anybody heard the Ten Commandments before? Come across those before? One of those is do not murder. I think we can all agree on that one. Another one is keep the Sabbath. Have a Sabbath. They're in the same list. I don't think they're ranked in order of importance. Like, these are the 10 big ones. Those two sit, it was curious to me. They sit in the same list. Interesting. Okay, anybody else?
It literally means, Sabbath means to stop. And one of the John Mark Comer things about Sabbath that he says that we like is it's to Sabbath means to say, I am enough and I have enough.
Nice. I am enough and I have enough. That's fabulous. Anybody else want to add anything to that? It is your last chance. Okay, so Sabbath is a regular rhythm of rest where we stop, usually once a week on an assigned day for 24 hours. It's a time when we cease from working and we push into delighting into all that God has made and the way that God has made us and the way that God has made the world around us. It's something that we see throughout the Bible right from the very beginning, where God created the world, and on the seventh day, after all that massive creative effort, he stopped and he rested as an example to us that we are then to push into as well. And throughout the history of the Bible, we've been encouraged again and again to build this rhythm of once a week taking a day to stop, unplug ourselves from the busyness of the world, to unplug ourselves from the commerce of the world, to stop our work and engage in God's beautiful world and what he's created. And God seems to really take this seriously because he reminds his people to observe this day again and again and again. And he even puts it in the list of the top 10, next to do not murder people, observe the Sabbath. So it's clearly really, really important to God. And there's loads of ways that we could approach talking about the Sabbath. But today we're just going to look at it really simply with that motto in our mind, that you're God and I'm not. Because I think one of the most powerful ways that we can live out that motto is to observe Sabbath in our week. To take one day from our week to cease from all work. To take a day to turn our phones off. To ignore social media for 24 hours. To live slowly. To live quietly. To trust God for the stuff that won't get done. To trust God for the stuff that should have happened in the meantime, to take time to invest in deep relationships, to eat well, to laugh, to play, to have really good sex, just saying, to drink wine, bake bread, pick flowers, to take spontaneous trips to the beach and eat our body weight in ice cream, to deliberately and methodically plan, to isolate a day from the busyness of the week, to disengage from it all, and to step into delight in who God's made us to be and how he's created the world. To remind ourselves that we're created by a God who wants us to experience wholeness and fullness and joy. To remind ourselves that God is generous and kind. To remind ourselves that God created us to run out of energy. It's part of our good God-given design to get tired. And so to come into agreement with that design by resting, to say, thank you, God, that I am carefully and wonderfully made to be limited. Thank you for my limits. Thank you that I run out. Thank you for your instruction to rest and refill. To remind ourselves that, and Sabbath is also to remind ourselves that a day is coming when all of the busyness will cease and when God will bring his kingdom in all of its fullness and every day will be a beach day. To engage in Sabbath is to decide to say thank you and yes, please to God's generous command to stop, to rest and to delight. To remember that it's one of the big ten nestled right next to don't kill people. To be organized about the other 6 days to make sure that we are working hard. We're working efficiently, that we're working diligently to ensure that we can stop for 24 hours. To cut out the meaningless crap in our lives. Like, honestly, if you've got 7 days to do everything and you get rid of one of those days, you've got to cut something out of your life. And frankly, the meaningless crap should go first. So all of the death scrolling on social media, the hours of TV, the hours of gaming, like, that's the stuff that should go first. But it's not just that, it's also a really powerful witness to those living around us. Because it's so different to the way the rest of the world lives. Why would you live like that? Like, my friends, they can't believe that I leave the house without my phone on a Saturday. Like, what are you doing? And then I say, why don't you try it one Saturday? And you know what? They try it, and they love it. It's great. It's to reject the lie that there is not enough in the world around us. To observe Sabbath is to reject the lie that we have to strive to create our own significance. To celebrate Sabbath is to reject the lie that we need to be our own God. It's to reject the lie that we need to find meaning inside of ourselves. It's to reject the lie that my identity is tied up in what I can produce and not who God made me to be. When Jesus was walking around and teaching, he fell out with some really religious guys on this very matter. When he was around, taking a Sabbath day, it had become a really religious thing to do. And like, people would look at how you were doing it and judge you for whether you were doing it well or doing it badly. And there's all sorts of rules and regulations about it. And Jesus wanted to really refocus them on what the Sabbath is actually there for. So Jesus said this: the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people. The Sabbath was put in place to meet the needs of the people and not for the people to meet the needs of the Sabbath. It's not about us doing the things that God would see us do on that day. It's about us engaging with who we are and how God has made the world for our benefit. This day is an invitation that has been laid before us. And really, the question is, will you say yes to this invitation or no thank you? Will you say yes please to this invitation to once a week delight in who God has made you and how he's created the world? Or will you say, no thank you, I'm okay? God in his generosity has invited us to live this way for our good and for the good of the world. To live out that motto, you're God, I'm not, so what? In a really, really practical way. To remind ourselves that we're not God and the universe does not revolve around us. That he is God and that he knows how the universe works. And that if we're likely to forget that, observing a Sabbath is a really good way of reminding ourselves of that. So we're going to be doing part two of this message in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to be talking about boundaries. How do we kind of create boundaries in our life? Yeah, you guys, there you go. You're welcome. How are we going to create boundaries in our lives to say yes and no to the right stuff and the wrong stuff? And how do we tell the difference? We're going to be doing some very practical stuff in a couple of weeks' time. But for today, I just want each of us to consider taking that invitation from God really, really seriously. To really seriously implement this rhythm in our lives, to trust God that he's good and faithful when he asks us to do this, that he will backfill the rest. So, as a family, as a little family, my wife and my two children, we've been taking Sabbath really seriously for about 6 years now. We had a moment where Em and I, we decided to push into busyness. We said to each other with our mouths out loud, we'll just push in for 6 months and, you know, our marriage is strong, our family is strong, we can take it. No. And we got to a moment where we were stood at the opposite ends of our house shouting at one another because we were so furious and exhausted, and we fell out in a way that we've never fallen out before. And the worst thing was I didn't even want to reconcile with her. And if I wanted to, I wouldn't have known how. We've never been in a place like that before. And it's because we deliberately chose to go with the busyness, to push into the busyness and make stuff happen by the sweat of our brow. We did that for 6 months and it nearly killed us, nearly wrecked our relationship. And since that time, we've been really serious about Sabbath. And no matter what's going on in the week, no matter how busy we are, no matter what pressure we're under, no matter what else we want to be doing with that time, Friday night to Saturday night is 24 hours of no phone, no work, fish and chips, games with the girls, ice cream galore. It's delighting in who God's made us to be. It's delighting in the home that he's given us. It's saying, yes, thank you, Jesus, for your goodness. And it's like rocket fuel in our family. It's like rocket fuel. It is the one thing that has revolutionized our family like nothing else, because it has put God in the center of our week, and it's bent our hearts towards saying yes and thank you to his goodness. And we understand his goodness in a way that we never did before. I could talk about this forever, because it really has revolutionized our family life. It's a good gift and a good invitation from God. I just don't know why you'd say no to it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to jump back into those little groups, and we're going to share, just before the kiddos come back in, about what has your experience of Sabbath been? Have you ever taken a day a week? Have you ever observed a Sabbath before? What are the barriers to you doing that? And what might God be inviting you to do? How could you do that? So the kiddos are going to come back in the next 5 minutes or so, and let's welcome them when they do. But let's spend the rest of the time that we have now in those groups discussing that, talking about what barriers we see, and then if there's time, let's pray for each other. Let's encourage one another, and let's be accountable to each other too. So take the time, and at some stage the kids will be back, but go for it.